Things are not well at Stillwater State Prison. Of course, it's to be expected that an institution of corrections with an inmate population of about 740 would present some amount of stress, complaint, and unfairness. We all know that the American penal system is imperfect, strained, and currently under scrutiny by official representatives of the system, interested citizens, and a new breed of outspoken convict. Stillwater Prison, like most prisons, is undergoing some slow changes in programs, personnel, and attitude towards corrections. It's too slow for some, too radical for others. But mostly, if there's no reason for ordinary citizens to focus on prison problems, the public just looks away and hopes that they can solve those problems. But in the late fall of this year, there were 3 inmate suicides and 2 attacks on guards with weapons. The media then had a hot story, and everyone seemed concerned about Stillwater. The prison administration tightened up and restricted citizens' groups from coming into the prison. They instituted a lockup and search procedure, and the state legislature, namely the House Governmental Operations Committee and the Crime and Corrections Committee, reflected some alarm. They formed a legislative subcommittee and called a hearing for Saturday morning, December 1st. I was there. It quickly became evident that the complexity of the problems at Stillwater would not make for easy solutions regarding safety and security for guards or inmate. The committee meeting broke up after 4 hours of the most general survey of prison life. I made my first news report on Monday, December 3rd. Here is part of that broadcast. Prison guard Bill Kiley reflected some skepticism about the attempts of the legislative committee to resolve the prison's problems.
Now, we as guards are just as much victimized by, I call them do-gooders. And when I say do-gooders, that's exactly what I mean. I mean getting involved in something for a short period of time and then forget it. Well, we can't do that as guards. We work there 8 hours, sometimes a little more, sometimes, but it's an 8-hour shift, 24 hours a day. Our involvement is there. And to make judgment for people that have no idea of what's behind that wall, no idea how the thing is run, and how people that can sit in the state capitol and send us rules and regulations, and how people can make laws, and how people can appropriate money to run our prison, and it's your prison as well as ours. When they have no idea what goes on behind them walls, other than it's a grim-looking fortress, changes must be made. Now you hear this is a great philosophy I've heard just the other day. I had a tour of people through there. One change I heard was, let's bulldoze the joint down. Let's bulldoze levelly. That's fine. That makes great conversation. To make changes, to make a change is not enough. What are the changes for? What are they going to benefit? What makes the difference between a good guard, so-called good guard, and a bad guard? A good guard will stand there and say yes all day, and he's a hell of a nice guy. A bad guard, he may say no out of 5 questions, and he's a son of a bitch. It's as simple as that. It's a very simple problem. Discipline is what is needed in everybody's life. It's needed in your life. It's needed in mine. I don't believe it's that complicated when it comes to the right people in the right place. And all I would beg you, and I am going to beg, is before you make decisions, when you make committees up that deal with our lives, the lives of the inmates, make the committee of equal people. Have a little of all of you on that committee. Put correctional officers on that committee. Put inmates on the committee. But don't put all people that have one goal in life if they're going to use us. I don't feel, and they don't feel, like they want to be political footballs. Put some good input into our correction systems so that we can be proud of it, that we can be proud that we work there.
It seemed to me, as the legislative committee opened its Saturday session, that they expected enough facts to be revealed so that some recommendations or actions might come from the morning's testimony. It quickly became evident that the communication between prison administration, prison guards, prison inmates, and the general public is so confused or non-existent that the unraveling of the problems and the consideration of solutions will not be an immediate or easy thing. The next meeting is scheduled for Monday, December 10th at 4 p.m. At that time, the committee will hear from the warden's office as well as from the guards and the prisoners. It was obvious that a legislative subcommittee could only peripherally explore the complex, deeply personal, deeply painful, terribly political Stillwater scene. But my reporting job was done until the next meeting. However, my curiosity about the prison problems just wouldn't stop, so I decided to do some information gathering on my own. This is my broadcast for Tuesday, December 4th. A few weeks ago, the warden of Stillwater State Prison, Bruce McManus, declared a state of emergency. He ordered an around-the-clock lockup of the prison's 735 inmates and a cell-by-cell shakedown for drugs and weapons. "We're going to try to break up this situation," he said. And indeed, the situation was really tense. The guards were upset and criticized the lack of discipline. The inmates felt unfairly and indiscriminately punished, and the administration felt under pressure from the public to get things under control. In an effort to understand this complex situation, I talked with two recent inmates about the current atmosphere at Stillwater.
The warden and his staff are public servants, and they are asked to do a certain job. What is society asking of the warden and his staff to do? What's being demanded of them?
That he shape things up in a hurry.
Well, they're saying that he shaped things up, but he is totally unequipped to do that job, you see. What does society mean? What do the citizens mean when they say shape things up? We're talking about people who went to jail with certain problems that aren't being dealt with in the prison. How can the warden shape these things up? I think we have one resident, a psychologist and a psychiatrist. We've got one doctor. We've got caseworkers that are virtually impossible to reach for an inmate to have any contact with.
You're saying then that there isn't any immediate problem that should surprise any of us, that it's the old problems of prison erupting.
That are still, that they haven't handled and they haven't learned to cope with. Now, you're talking about caseworkers. Normally, there's about 9 or 10 caseworkers in the prison. Now, this could be some of this problem here. Now, there, I think, are 4 caseworkers. So now, that means almost every caseworker is carrying a double load, 200 men caseload.
So each caseworker
has
200
right now, because there's only 4 or 5 of them. There's about half. There's a lot of advertisements for jobs there.
Some enlightened people that are asked to be considered to work at the prison in some capacity where they can contribute what they have to help implement the change. But the attitude that they meet when they do get into these job responsibilities tells them that they're really not going to be allowed to be effective. And out of their frustrations, they leave. And I would be very concerned with what's happening with these men, knowing that they're going to be returned to the society. What type of men are coming out of prison? What are we doing for these men to help them deal more effectively this time around after having been incarcerated than they were before they went? When I read about a prisoner stabbing a staff member or committing suicide, it makes me aware that there are pressures that this man is living up under in the prison in itself that I would like to see alleviated in some way, because I know that the pressure is not going to end for him when he comes back out here. And I know that in some way, somewhere sooner or later, that I, as a citizen, am going to have to pay for this somewhere down the line. I'm going to be hurt by it. It's going to cost me something.
Possession of weapons and drugs by inmates is a recognized problem in most prisons. I asked these ex-cons to comment on drug use at Stillwater.
Most people that get into drugs and stay with drugs are hurting for whatever reason. And until they don't have a reason to stop using the drugs in jail, they're going to. As long as we have these contradictions, one that's, you know, the main one is that we're being told that we're no longer just being punished, that there is going to be some help during this incarceration. The incarceration itself is punishment enough. But if we're being helped, and this is the form of help that we're getting, then I sure enough need something to ease my pain.
Do you think that there will be any way to stop the drugs coming in the prison?
No. Drug-oriented people are the cleverest in the world. And if there's any drugs, they will have them. There's no way.
That's a little city in there, just like our city is here. And everything goes on in there that goes on out here. That includes bribing the cops, the politicians. No more or less than Watergate. And if it goes on and up there, you know it's going to go on down here. And that's just what he says. If it means getting to somebody high, that's who they'll get to high if they have to bring them in, if it becomes that desperate.
I'm saying that if there's drugs to be had, those men in prison are going to have those drugs. If it takes the warden to bring those drugs in, the drugs will be there.
If they'll kill or pull a knife on a guard, they're sure going to do anything else to get those drugs in there. You know, or any place else. That's why they need such the treatment. You know, why do they need the drugs that bad? Why? You know, it's Jesus Christ, I can't understand it.
Nothing else is happening for them.
Well, that's true. That is very true. That nothing else is happening for them, and that's how they get out of the prison. They get out in their heads. That's right. Even if it's for an hour. It's really strange that right now, where that prison is with the individuals, because you know a big drive in prison is sex, but it isn't right now. It's escapism, you know, in their goddamn minds.
And it's only in the minds of the public right now. Something's going to come along in a day or two to take the public's mind off of Stillwater, and Stillwater's going to revert to the same things happening that have been happening until another incident comes up that'll sell some more newspapers.
You're not very optimistic about anything being resolved.
I didn't hear or see any newspaper articles saying, let's help that prisoner in there because he's on drugs. You see, I haven't heard anything like that. So I don't know. I guess that's where he's at, and that's where I'm at. I want to see him helped, not hurt.
Then on Wednesday, December 5th, I filed this further report. When discussing the problems at Stillwater Prison, many argue that things would run more orderly and more predictably if the custodial function was emphasized. Others claim just the opposite, that help and understanding for the prisoner, referred to as training and treatment, is the direction to be taken for resolving prison problems. Still others claim that the problems arise from a schizophrenia of attitude. Sympathy and support for training and treatment by some in charge, and a strong emphasis on custodial procedures by others. Three recent inmates of Stillwater Prison offered me their view.
Custody is just one of them things where they say, let's divide and conquer this place. You know, the hell with treatment and training and these people that want to come in and be do-gooders and help a convict. We don't need them. Let's just lock them up. Let's be the big strong arm, you know, and I don't understand that.
That prison was run as a business. It would last about a week. Or maybe a month.
It would completely fall apart. Myself, I think the whole thing, like I say, is planned. And I really want to get that point across, because I think everybody, your mass media is exploiting all the violence, you know, the drugs. They put big words, narcotics, three people stabbed, all this kind of things. But to yet never go into the feelings of what happens in this, you know, and your public sees, well, yeah, they already got the idea that the people in a penitentiary are animals anyway, because why would a penitentiary be there if they're not? So you hear this and they say, well, right on, just stick them away and lock them up and tighten that place up tighter to drum. And the more input on that, the closer it's going to go to that. And the closer and the longer, you know, this system's been here for 3,000 years and hasn't worked yet. So how many? We got to have another 3,000 years? And people wondering, well, why is the crime rate going up? And you have systems like this that don't work?
You know, the inmates there, when they started that, I forget the name of it now, where they have meetings, advisory council. When they started that, all the inmates thought that was beautiful. You know, we thought, well, we're going to be able to help get some things changed, to help, you know, live here better. And, yeah, it was a beautiful idea, but it ain't going nowhere. I mean, they give us little, they say okay to little bitty things, you know. But when it comes to things that would probably really help, they don't listen. And when I say they, I'm talking about McManus, because he's the one that makes the rules, you know. What good is having an inmate representative if they're not going to listen to the inmate representative?
They got about a $3,000-$5,000 system, PA system in there. And that warden, the only time that warden talks to any inmate or any lieutenant or any higher staff is when there's trouble. Even when things are going good, they'll never say, well, look, fellas, we're going to have an extra movie on Tuesday because you dudes are functioning pretty good. You know, things are running good. When it's good for you, it's good for us. You know, nothing like that. They just waste that PA system. You know, it's a big joke.
So is that PA camera system, they got a whole camera system that they put in there that's, I don't know how many thousands and thousands of dollars in there. That's totally ridiculous. You don't go into a 17th century castle and put camera systems around and think you've updated the castle. It don't work that way.
I like that.
Well, yeah, it doesn't work, you know. And how many thousands? I heard something, a figure, you know, $20,000 or something was spent in this. And how ridiculous. That money is one of the, and the other things, if they could apply that to things that would really be beneficial. You know, such
two
as
more psychologists or psychiatrists.
Everybody feels though. Why do they buy these cameras when we don't even have a basketball? You know,
what? That's treatment.
A $500,000 gym, and don't have enough basketballs to play basketball. Don't have enough tennis balls to play tennis ball. They don't have a tennis court. You know, yet they've got, you know, thousands of dollars to hook up a camera that makes no sense. And the camera they put in A hall and B hall, all it looks at is the sergeant's desk, you know.
It don't go any farther.
It don't go any.
It doesn't see anything. So you know, one wonders, well, what's really happening here? You know, who is getting sold a bill of goods?
It looks good for the people coming in on a visit.
The people are getting sold a bill of goods, like in what's happening in the mass media over this last thing. Is the public? They're getting sold a bill of goods that. Yeah, we're really pumping a lot of money in here to really change things, and what's essentially happening is nothing. You know, they're wasting thousands of dollars.
$5,000 camera in the main hallway, and it can't even see down to the kitchen door. You know, what good is that? You can stand 2 feet behind custody office and beat somebody to death. You know, one day I was in there, and okay, now the camera's running, you know, and it's going back and forth looking at inmates walk out of A and B hall. So there was these two inmates standing right in the middle of the turnkey area there, fighting. Now this guy's got this $5,000 camera and don't see him fighting. Custody had to call him and say, hey, don't you see these guys fighting in the hallway? You know, and this was told by me by a sergeant there, you know.
You know, we continue to talk about the heads and you know, who's responsible. Where's the responsibility line? I think is an old saying, you know, dumb like a fox. There's much less pressure when you can run a system totally punitive. I mean, nobody's there to say, well, hey, because you beat that dude or because this happened or because that happened, there's nobody from the outside to say, well, I don't think that's right. Then they can do as they want. Their kingdom is isolated, you know. And you have, but you're dealing with 700 and some odd people's lives, you know, and that becomes totally secondary because that is the rear end of society. Everybody out there, they're not really people, you know. You know, when you isolate a problem like that, when you take where the problem initiated was in society, and you isolate it and you put it in like I say, 17th century reality, and then wonder why it doesn't work. Well, yeah, I know why it doesn't work. The problem started here. This is where it has to be dealt with.
Others still had more to say, so I submitted this feature news segment on Thursday, December 6th. The functioning of Stillwater State Prison has recently been stressed by the suicide of three young prisoners and two separate attacks on guards. Much of the speculation on the cause of such violence has to do with a suspicion that illicit drug use is a major factor. However, there are some convicts who feel that the real problems at Stillwater are lack of understanding, communication, and human caring. That's what's behind everything, explained one ex-inmate. We have the same human needs and fears as people on the outside. I talked with two ex-cons and a woman counselor at Stillwater. I asked them if they knew any of the inmates that had killed themselves.
Yes, I did, and it's fortunate I was up there when some other ones killed themselves. And it's, you know, it's a shame they get in a cell and these guys really have problems. I mean, at that time, and it's problems that they can't answer themselves, and they scream and they holler and they break windows out and ask for somebody to come talk to them. And guards don't have time because they're told to do something else. So this man sits there and waddles in his own self-pity. And the next thing you know, he has only one way of letting it out, and that's to do some kind of thing that maybe some of the people I know, maybe, you know, to me struck as they shouldn't have killed herself. They never, you know, I never thought they would do that. You know, not them. I would picture myself doing it before these couple guys would have. But yet they, you know, maybe they were doing it just to say, well, maybe if I look like I'm killing myself, a guard might do something for me. And maybe it just happened, it went all the way. I don't know, but it's a shame, and I blame it on the staff as well as the guy that did it. You know, I blame it on the staff for not being able to recognize this guy having a hang-up and do something about it, and I blame it on the guy for being so weak that he had to do it.
People reaching out in many different ways. The fellow causing trouble to be recognized, but then nobody having time to get with him and really get down to the nitty-gritty. So many times people will go out of their way to cause something, like I say, even to get in there, and once they're in there, they find they're in a system that's, they're backed up to a wall, and they still find no help. So they'll do things to be recognized. They'll say, hey, look at me, and come on, let's. I'm hurting, you know, in not specific ways. People sometimes can't communicate that, but they'll communicate it in many, many other ways. What happens is that incident, like the other incident, is being identified as something that needs to be punished, and not getting down and understanding the whole problem and giving the time and saying, well, yeah, what's the problem here?
Are the attacks on the guards some of the same thing, do you think?
It's their way of saying, we're tired of you, you know, and it's the only way we're going to get somebody to change something by blasting out at somebody. That's the only, they've got to the point now where they say, only violence is going to get us changes. We've done all our talking. We've got our groups together, our counselors, inmate counselors. That's not working. They don't want to listen to our talk, so let's start some little violence around, you know?
I guess I agree with that. I hear them saying, help me, give me what I need, and God damn it, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to get it one way or another.
How desperate do I got to be before I strike out and then become justified? If I'm going to be punished, I'm going to be justified in that punishment. I'm going to do something.
Another thing, when I told you about the rule book, of all things, about the end of that rule book, they've got attempted suicide 365 days in the hole. Now, isn't that really sweet of them to punish you like that for wanting to commit suicide? So what do you, you know, what does that say for the people that made up that rule book? You know, when I saw that, I couldn't believe it.
For
trying to kill yourself.
For reaching out, if you're so desperate and so lonely and so confused that you want to die, that if you try that, well, we're going to put you in a hole.
Yeah.
And the hole is just, yeah.
You get a year in a hole for yelling for help.
Yeah, right.
That's where I see treatment is so valuable. When we have treatment and we have groups or we have one-to-one counseling, when a counselor can go to a guy and talk about this, a guy can maybe get over that communication hang-up of being able to say, quote, I need help, I'm hurting, I'm lonely, I'm empty, without having to do something desperate. That's what treatment is for, where we can make that language possible, where we can get in there and say to that guy, hey, it's not unmasculine, it's not inhuman, it's real to say I'm hurting. Let's deal with it, let's talk about it, what can I do to help? Treatment is harassed out of there. When a guy needs help, that's how loud he has to scream. He slits his wrists or hangs himself.
There are many who can talk about the problems at Stillwater, not just the inmates. Two guards at the prison were helpful in the preparation of my broadcast for Friday, December 7th. The program began with my comment.
Two inmates told me about your rule book and how in the last year there have been 4 complete revisions of the rules, and that they don't know what they can do, they don't know what they can't do, they don't know what they'll be severely punished for, and they don't know which guard will overlook what. Is there any truth in that complaint?
I don't know how many revisions that they've had on the rule book, but there is a somewhat lax of consistency in following the rule book. The consistency within the institution is sort of lax, and that's probably what, you know, the inmate feels that the rule book, when the rule book is put out.
It's even hard for guards to keep up with the changes of the rule books.
Could you fault the administration for this kind of inconsistency? Do you think that not knowing what the rules are, the guards not being sure what they can allow and what they must report and what they must punish, and the inmates not certain where they stand is the cause of some of the problems?
No, I can't put the blame on just the administration, because it goes all the way down. Because even if you have a rule, if one guard will allow something, the next one shouldn't allow it either. But they don't. Everybody wants to be a good guy, and that way that makes it tougher for the other guys to do their job.
You know, the inmate feels that when an officer says no, he's the bad guy. You know, they can't accept the word no. An inmate will approach an officer, and he'll ask an officer for some type of favor or some type of, you know, something within the institution rules. And the officer say, well, no, I don't think that I can do it. Well, why? You know, and right then, that's when the inmate loses that respect for that officer, because he says no.
Aren't some of the no's arbitrary?
Yes, I think so. You know, yes, I do. I do.
What do you think about the conversations of custody versus training and treatment? Is there really big philosophical differences?
Yeah, I think there is, because they're coming from different points of view, and it's hard to get them together. We had an associate warden, Jerry Anderson, who was, I think, trying to get it together, and they kind of eased him out the door, so to speak, I think. And it's really hard to say, because I look at it from a custody point of view, and it's hard to look at a training and treatment unless I sometime maybe get on that side and get together. That's the whole trouble, is they don't get together. There's a real lack of communication there of what the objectives really are.
It goes right back to training of these officers. You know, yeah, we got the old line staff that, you know, that are set in their ways. You know, and the two have to meet. We're constantly hiring the two of them. You know, I think that the people have to change with the times. You know, and to do that, they have to, you know, they have to be oriented as far as changing, as far as the training aspect of the institution.
Like maybe up till 2 years ago, when a new man came in, there was maybe one or two new men that came in, and it was really hard for them to make any changes at all, because they were broken in by the old line staff, and they were told, well, this is what you have to do, and you will do this or you'll be out. But we've had such an influx now of new people, we're kind of taking over, so to speak.
Do you think that the real philosophy of the administration of Warden McManus and his staff is towards opening up for more social workers, more psychiatrists, more inmate counselors, more guards that are trained in the academy?
Definitely,
yes. I think the new guards have a different way of going about being tough. I mean, I don't like the word tough, but for lack of a better word, I'll have to use it. There's a way you can go about it where an inmate can relate to it. If you say, explain to them why things are being done, most guys will accept it.
I don't care if you have the most belligerent inmate in the world, there's a way to talk to him, and you can get that inmate to do anything you want him to do, because he gets the feeling that you're respecting him as a man, you know, and he's going to do it because he's going to respect you as a man. And I feel that if you treat them inmates like men, they're going to treat you like men, you know.
Then in a way you're implying that things are going to tighten up, but with plan and with purpose, and but they are going to tighten up.
Yes, they are. They are going to tighten up, and it's, you know, it's going to be a planned thing. They're going to let the inmates know that, you know, this is what we want. This is how it's going to be. We're going to change it this way. And
there's 95% of the inmates want things tightened up. I mean, it's not just staff that want things tightened up.
Is it possible to tighten up, so to speak, and still offer prisoners the kind of psychiatric help, the kind of counseling help, the kind of training help that they claim they need and want so badly?
I think so. I really do, because we got different units in the, within the institution that those inmates can identify with. We have drug counseling. We have alcohols. We have the different units that it can be tightened up, and those inmates can fit into them units.
Do you think the legislative committee, in hearing the warden and his administration, in hearing the guards come into their committee meeting, and several cons that are speaking to discuss the problems at Stillwater, will be able to give the legislative committee enough information so that they can act appropriately?
No, I don't think so. I think that that committee should get to get their attaché cases and their notebooks and their pencils and come down there and work about a week in that institution, 8 hours, and see what goes on a daily basis. No, they're not going to really just get it over a table, over a conference table. You got to get in there and see what's going on. You know, they're just getting a few views. You know, they can go in there and they can work and they can see a situation occur and how it occurs, and then they can take it from there.
On Monday, December 10th, the Joint Legislative House Subcommittee met once again. I filed this report. The 16-member group, composed of persons from the Governmental Operations Committee and the Crime Prevention and Corrections Committee, seemed to me to be a strange combination. They clearly have different interests, and their background information on our Minnesota prison system varies from fairly knowledgeable to almost total lack of information or previous concern. However, the committee has already had two meetings, both attended by a large number of Stillwater guards, several current inmates of the prison, and yesterday, Warden Bruce McManus and his staff were seated promptly at 4 p.m. when the meeting began, ready to talk with the committee. Chairman Bill Quirin called on T. William, the Ombudsman for Corrections, who spoke briefly, and also one inmate from the prison who offered a short summary on a convict's attempts to help himself. Then, in little more than 55 minutes, as the dinner hour approached, and so did the end of the day, the meeting was abruptly terminated. Amazed, as I had understood that the prison situation was considered a crisis thing, I asked one member of the committee, Representative James Euland, just what was going on.
Today we brought the head of the prison in, Bruce McManus. We brought his number one staff man in. We brought the guards in. And we didn't hear from any of them. I think the Governmental Operations Committee has probably gotten a lot of concern from the guards, and they wanted a forum for the guards.
I personally find the questions that come from some of the committee members excruciatingly naive and absolutely almost ignorant of the existing situation. I don't understand why they haven't done their homework if they're really concerned about corrections and the problems that exist at Stillwater.
This is the Governmental Operations Committee, and I think they are largely ignorant of the problems. And so we begin all over again with half the people at the table not understanding what the problems are and going through all the old solutions and not understanding the prison itself or the programs at the prison or what's been tried and what's failed. Largely, this committee is marking time.
Marking time for what reason?
I think this is a safety valve for the guards and the community, that the Governmental Operations Committee perhaps thinks the Crime and Corrections Committee was too treatment-oriented, too progressive. And so now this committee wants to be a vehicle for the guards' expression, to give them a role. And as the majority in the legislature has changed, the unions have become a much stronger force, and it appears to me that this is going to be the committee through which they intend to speak.
Then I indeed would have appreciated hearing the guards' point of view today. It has been 10 days since the last meeting, and I really expected at the adjournment of the last session a week and a half ago that several guards would be able to express their feelings and frustrations today.
And I was surprised that we adjourned very early. The guards who driven all the way in from Stillwater weren't heard from. What disturbs me is we're just taking some undirected, unrigorous testimony, which isn't focused on any piece of legislation. It isn't focused on changing the prison. We keep calling it background information. Well, I'm tired of background information. I've been on the committee for 5 years, and I think the Corrections Subcommittee has enough background information. We should start making some decisions and start taking some actions.
I have a good deal of
frustration and resentment as a citizen. I mean, I realize that the holidays is when everybody takes off, so to speak, but I really resent that everything has to be ignored. They point to it as a crisis situation and then proceed to schedule their next meeting for sometime in January and adjourn within an hour of beginning today. I'm absolutely appalled and feel that, you know, I want some explanation from someone on the committee.
I don't think the committee is receiving any direction. For instance, the agenda is supposed to be set by the chairman, and one would hope that it would be, it would lay out some type of plan. It seems to me that all the guards are saying is we want less movement in the prison, we want more guard staff to be more watchful on these men who are going to have the same problems regardless of the actions that this committee takes.
Do you think the citizens ought to make some complaint about this legislative subcommittee not fulfilling what they started out to do, or at least what they proclaimed they were about?
Part of the problem has been that the governor has retreated, and I think quite substantially, from prison reform. He went out on a limb with Commissioner Fogel, and when Commissioner Fogel started developing a constituency of the people for considerable reform in the prison, that he became visible, the problems of the prison became more evident, and the attention was focused on the commissioner and thus on the governor who had appointed him. The governor didn't like that because people started saying, hey, we don't like some of the things going on in the prison. And then when changes were starting to be made and there were some failures, the public said, hey, we don't like that you failed in this experiment. And rather than the governor coming back strongly and saying, we intend to experiment and we hope that you'll have the patience to understand when we fail, he called up Fogel and said, get out of the newspapers and make sure that the head of the prison takes all the heat for things that go wrong in the prison rather than you or me. So Fogel left. And I think prison reform in Minnesota has been on the downgrade ever since. So we see the emergence of the new strong voice of the guards, the emergence of the voice for control in the prison, for discipline in the prison, for removal of the outside groups that have, the guards say, been causing tremendous problems. And I think we're going backwards fast. The three suicides are probably as instructive of that as anything.
Is there anything an ordinary citizen can do?
I have great faith in letters to the editor. I don't think that we have had many letters to the editor saying that the governor should be more bold and less timid. I think we should get some of those, and some from good progressive Democrats in the state. If I say anything, it's a Republican criticizing a Democrat rather than someone interested in prison reform being critical of someone who I think isn't going very fast, if not backwards, on the issue.
I'm having the feeling that this committee, the existence of this committee, is keeping someone else from getting involved. It's like a smokescreen.
I agree. Perhaps this committee is being used to sap some of the energy away and the time away from the corrections subcommittee, which was doing some things that the guards objected to. You are possibly quite correct.
Representative James Euland, a member of the specially formed committee to consider the current stress at Stillwater, expressing his doubts about the benefits of this new legislative group. Big problems still unattended, unexplained. Understanding the Stillwater situation was becoming increasingly complicated and frustrating. On Tuesday, December 11th, I prepared another broadcast segment of my conversation with the two Stillwater guards.
Do you think the public has any real understanding of what that situation is in the prison from the point of view of the guard or the prisoner or even what the administration has to cope with?
Definitely not. If they did, they wouldn't be so quick to criticize the officers when he's doing his job. I don't feel that they have no understanding of an institution, of what an officer or maybe an inmate has to go through, you know, when he's in the institution. It's like a fad, you know. It's going to blow over pretty soon, and you know, all of a sudden everybody's interested in corrections. You know, next week it'll probably be something else. You know, but the public don't know what's going on in institutions.
The only feedback that the public gets on the institution is what they read in the papers, And you can't really blame the public because that's what they hear. And they have the TV image of, you know, James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart type prisoners, which isn't, it's not, it's just not that way.
Are you implying that you think the public really will lose interest in some of the needs and changes that are necessary at the prison, and that possibly the legislative committee that's trying to resolve some of the tension and fear is really not going to take continuing interest?
I don't know what the legislature is going to do, but as far as the public in general, there it definitely, my feeling is the fact that it is just a fad thing, you know.
I just hope it isn't a fad. It is right now, because you can see the pattern. But
what changes would you, as a guard, like to see?
I think what they're going to have to do is segregate a few that are causing the trouble. It's maybe 40 or 50 people that are causing all the trouble. It's not the whole 700 by any means.
Any other suggestions?
More public awareness, just like things we're doing right now, is making people aware that inmates are human and so are guards, and it's a bad situation. Maybe it can be changed.
And I don't think the legislatures or the public are going to be a part of that change. I mean, I don't think they're going to be a big part of the change, you know. The people that are working there are going to be part of that. They're going to be the big part of the change. We're going to be the change, you know. Those people, those outside people are not going to change the institution.
Do you really think that there's an atmosphere for change? Do you think the public really wants a lot of openness and change, and is that the direction of the change?
I think that change now, the change right now, it has to be a slow one. It can't we can't do it right now, or we'll have total chaos probably. If the public was so concerned about institutions that they can do something, they got millions of agencies in the Twin City area. If they were so concerned about institution and about change, they should come in and offer some type of assistance, some type of constructive assistance for the institution. They talk about what they're going to do, the public I'm speaking of. They talk about what they're going to do, and they don't do it.
Matter of that they don't do it, or there isn't any machinery available so they can do anything? Does the administration really want help from the public in changing the prison system?
I think the public plays a big part as far as what's going to happen to an inmate or not. You know, the public puts the inmate in the institution, you know, not the administration or not the officer. You know, the public does it. You know, they put him here. The public should be concerned about what this inmate does, his day-to-day activities in the institution, and how to change it if he is out of order. The public should be mostly concerned about the inmate and the guard, you know, in the institution.
All the inmates are going to be back out in the streets someday, so they're going to have to deal with it then. They might as well deal with it now and maybe make some positive changes, like halfway houses, which are pretty effective, I think. But if the public won't accept them, you can't use them.
Those people, these people, the public, if they're so concerned about the institution, you know, okay, if they're concerned about what the officer does to this inmate, you know, but when this inmate wants to finally come out in the community, why don't they say, you're welcome in our community? You know, come in our community and we will help you lead a productive life, you know. But they don't. They're afraid. We don't want him in this community. He's a detriment to the community, you know.
You mean the public expects more from guards and prison administrations than they do from themselves?
Definitely, yes.
They expect us to initiate the change, but we can't do it, because how can you judge a man's behavior in an institution and relate that to how he's going to behave on the streets? Because an institution is a world in itself. It's completely different than living on the streets. This is the kind of information that the public has to get. It's from the inside and straightforward, not the trumped-up TV version of all they hear about is the violent things that happen in prison, but there's a lot of good things that happen. There's a lot of good groups in that institution. There's a lot of people that are trying to improve themselves, but you never hear about that. Never. Because that doesn't make good print. It's just when people reach the point of suicide or somebody gets cut and things like that. That's the kind of thing. Or escapes. That's a big one right there. They really glorify that. They need to hear some of the good things too, and there are a lot of good things that happen there.
I think that goes right back to, you know, the fad. You know, I just love the word fad because it is. And, you know, it goes right back to college campuses. You know, they only listened to the news when students were getting shot down, but they didn't, you know, they didn't listen to how a student is doing in a classroom or what he's, you know, what he's going to do when he gets out of there. You know, it just goes back to the institution. You know, all they hear is when the officer is hitting the inmate upside the head or the inmate is committing suicide. They don't want to hear how this officer can communicate when they can get right down and talk to each other. You know, they don't want to hear that because it's not news. It doesn't interest them.
Shut the prison doors and take care of it. I pay my taxes.
Right, that's it. That's the very words, right.
My next feature news segment was a conversation with Warden Bruce McManus, a man who is clearly in the middle at Stillwater Prison, and he knows it. No matter what problems erupt at Stillwater Prison or what measures are taken to prevent problem areas from becoming unmanageable, there seems to be an undercurrent of differing views that ultimately sabotages the most honest and noble efforts. Some define it simply as the philosophical difference between custodial correction and training and treatment. Warden Bruce McManus has been running an institution that has received strong pressure for more of both. On the one hand, tighter security, tougher rules for inmates, more guards, less freedom for prisoners within the daily programs of the institution. Then, on the other hand, many argue for and have achieved more inmate participation in solving their own problems, more psychological help, and more counselors, including training prisoners for this function, and also attempting to set up a new relationship of intimacy and cooperation between the prison guards and the prison inmates. Warden McManus indeed has a dilemma. And when public pressure demands he do something to solve problems, he says that he usually gravitates towards tighter custody. We talked about it. Is it true that there is this split in philosophy of how to run the prison?
Oh, I think there is, and there's a custody-treatment conflict in every institution. We're attempting to deal with it, I think, rationally by reorganizing the dichotomy out and dividing the institution up into small mini-prisons with program directors who will be responsible for both custody and treatment. This isn't a panacea, I guess, but it's our stab at doing away with what is essentially a very annoying problem.
Let's talk about that new plan. I hadn't heard anything about it. When will it start and how will it function?
Well, we've been working for about 18 months analyzing the problem. We've had consultants in and many meetings, and we feel that the only way really to make head or tail out of that place and to make it respond to the needs of the current times is this reorganization. We now have our custody assigned by units. It isn't completely achieved. Our training and treatment department is not broken up by units yet. We have yet to employ four program directors we're looking for to run the so-called mini institutions. But we're well into it, and we would hope that the next 30 to 90 days we'll have achieved our objective. We think that this may be the first step in avoiding the inevitable problems between custody and treatment. And by the way, I don't ever get into too much trouble for not doing much treatment, but I get into a lot of trouble when it comes to custody situations, and I guess I never realized that, but the everyday urgency seems to be in custody.
Many have said to me when discussing the prison that they feel that you and your administration has ignored a potentially explosive situation at many times. Well, the recent focus is on the three suicides. Why weren't these people who were obviously distressed noticed? How can they go unnoticed in a situation that purports to offer them psychological help when it's needed?
Well, I think that that's incorrect, that we're always very concerned about explosive situations. We may be more concerned about that than the overall welfare of the inmates occasionally. I think that the matter of suicides, suicide is a very personal matter. And in two of the three suicides, we really didn't know that the people were in emotional trouble, although they had, I guess, disclosed their emotional problems to some other inmates. We weren't very much aware. And we don't just wait around for people to commit suicide. We'd like to have intervened. We don't have the capacity, frankly, to do psychological counseling extensively on everybody. We don't have psychiatric services available other than one day a week. So we're sort of weak in this area. But I don't feel I should run around and be guilty of suicides any more than you should be when someone in your community commits suicide.
Will the new mini-prison system really change things? Warden Bruce McManus certainly hopes so. But the rearranging of the pieces of that puzzle doesn't necessarily assure that. The inmates seem to have had little input in this new venture, the guards seem to come out with a more limited geographic area to police, and the administration can say, okay, everybody, we've responded to the problem. Will the medicine cure the ills? Well, we'll see. My next segment was one last conversation with ex-inmates, their view of the inside as the outside sees it. Often people from the general community are offered a tour of Stillwater Prison. A look inside, it's called, a chance to see firsthand what prison is like so that problems can be better understood. But there are those that feel that this kind of exposure reveals information of no real value. I talked with three recent inmates of Stillwater Prison.
Why aren't things, are people so stupid or so ignorant that a system like this has been around for so long and yet they can't identify the problems? Well, why?
This you're talking about civilians are talking over the problems like the legislature. Don't know shit. Probably been in a prison. Some of them probably never been in a prison. If it has, it's been for an hour.
You know, they have the prison says, yeah, let's have tours in there, you know. So they bring people in to see this prison. Now, the 13 months I was there, Custy really thinks they're slick. Now, what they did in A-Hall was they took the very first cell in A-Hall, and I mean, they painted it. They put beautiful pictures on it. They put brand new sheets, brand new pillows, brand new blanket, polished the floor, you know, just polished it, put a beautiful sign for the inmate's name up there, which there is no inmate that's ever been in there, you know. Then they take these guys through, these women from wherever, these men from wherever, even your legislatures and all these things. They take them in there and they say, look at this cell. This is the way they all are, you know?
Yeah.
And they show them the cell. They don't take them. I don't think I've ever seen a tour go into the custody back end. Back there where these guys are, you know, food's being spit on. And you know, I did 3 days in the back end one time. And I've seen guards spit in the food and say, here, eat it. I've seen them put cigarettes out in the food and say, here, eat it. You know, they don't take them back there and see the smell, the stink that's back there. Or look at this one place, the hole shaped just like a coffin. Honest to God, it looks just like a coffin.
A tall coffin.
It's shaped like a coffin. When you step in there, you swear to God you're the next thing to dead. You know, and they give you nothing. A little light stays on. They don't show them this stuff, but they show them this beautiful cell that they've spent maybe $200, $300 to fix up, you know. And they only let them talk to certain inmates. You know, if an inmate does talk to anybody that's in that tour, it's to certain ones. And, you know, it's not to the dudes in there that really want to say, hey, these are the problems, and I can tell you if you listen to me. When they have 90% of the times when they call inmates to come in front of people to tell problems, it's inmates that really don't care. See, it's not the true inmate. It's not the guy that's got a gut full of pain in here because they're fucking with him, you know, and he sees it being messed with other inmates. And I know this is happening, and the inmates know it. The inmates are sick of seeing these, talking about, yeah, we're going to have inmates represent by talking to the legislature or something, and it's not a true choice of the inmates.
We once had a thing, I don't want to identify it, it was a group that came in. And it happened to be that there was a journalist that came in. And then when the journalist came in, well, they didn't know that he was coming in. And we came into the group, and he wrote about the group. But when they came out, they recognized the journalist's name, and they went into a turmoil. And I mean they, the head echelon, the authority of that penitentiary, went into a headstorm. They didn't know, well, we got press back in there, good Lord, and there's nobody to escort him. There's nobody to show him these cells that we got set aside. There's nobody to keep him to the you know, the people that we got as our, you know, that's going to say all the right things and not ever become, you know, not ever get that real input. They went almost, McManus was down in the cell block. I never seen him down the cell block until that time because he'd heard the name of the journalist being in there and he wanted to be down there to make sure that that guy didn't get the input that he, you know, didn't get the real story.
No matter who views it, No matter how much things change, it's still a prison. I concluded my brief survey of the problems at Stillwater with my December 18th broadcast, A View of Prison by the Citizens of Minnesota, a recording taken at random in the lobby of the Lowry Medical Arts Building in St. Paul.
Should be stricter, because that's what they're in there for. You know, we aren't going to give them a free ride in there and treat them like they're on the outside.
Do you think that the problems arose because there isn't enough discipline in the prison?
Yes, that's what they're there for.
What do you think about the general public? Do you think that they have knowledge of what's going on in prisons, and do you think it's important that they understand the situation at Stillwater?
I don't think anyone really knows, really. I think they hide a lot of things from the public. Well, you know, it's just with everything else. You know, they never let the public really know what's going on. They just give a little here and there and think everything's just hunky-dory, you know.
What if the public did know what was really going on? Do you think that it would matter to the public, and what effect do you think that they could have on things?
I don't think we need to know everything, personally. I don't think the public would gain anything by knowing everything they do.
I really and truly think that the public at large would like to see the prison run by the warden and the people that are paid to do so. I do not believe that I believe that the people themselves would like to see stricter rules and so forth to keep this thing down. And I think that's most of these guys, these so-called tough guys, that's all they understand.
Oh, I don't know. I think these prisoners, they're in there for committing a crime. I think they should realize this and go according, not always. They want recreation and they want this and they want that. They could have had that on the outside had they behaved themselves. But I think they should be there for more than just recreation than they are, and wanting, demanding all these different privileges. I think that's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I have pretty much agree with you. It's just that it seems that the demand situation, not only in the prisons, but in everything else, has gotten so great that everybody demands something, and then they move to the point where they're demanding pretty much beyond what I believe they should get. If the facilities are clean, they learn a trade. Actually, that's about all that they can expect when they're placed behind bars.
You don't believe, then, in the money and time necessary for a complete training and treatment program?
Oh, absolutely not. They could get this on the outside if they really needed it. We have different organizations that help people like this, and they could get this training on the outside. Oh, I believe in training some of them that are willing to be, but the biggest majority I don't think are.
There's always going to be stress in a prison. I just can't see where you can put a human into a... It's like being in that elevator 24 hours a day. I mean, it would take an awful lot for me to control myself, and the situation is unfortunate, but I think to do it right, the amount of funds would just be absurd, and I don't believe that the percentage of rehabilitation would be great enough to merit it. I can see better facilities, maybe better and updated training, but beyond that, the psychological treatment that everybody hears about, it's very difficult for me to understand that kind of an expenditure could be merited.
Prisons, prisoners, problems, possibilities, public passions. The legislature, the Department of Corrections, the administrative staff, the line guards, the counseling and treatment staff, the inmates, the public, the press. Everybody has their own view of the unrest at Stillwater State Prison. I'm Connie Goldman.